Hey everyone, it's Rich Bennett, host of Conversations with Rich Bennett, bringing you an exciting chance to win with our latest giveaway sponsored by Tar Heel Construction Group. Get ready to make a splash just by tuning in to the podcast. Yes, you heard that right. While you're soaking up our latest episodes, listen closely for a special splash sound. When you hear it, remember the episode name. Here's what you do next. Shoot us an email at podcast@harfordcountyliving.com with the episode title. Each splash sound means a new chance to win. So the more you listen, the better your chances. If you don't have email, then just leave a voicemail from our website at conversationswithrichbennett.com. What's the prize? How about a brand new waterproof Bluetooth speaker? Perfect for listening to our episodes, whether you're in the bath, on the beach, in the pool, or on the go. You have until the end of May to send in your entries, and we'll announce the lucky winner on June 3rd. Don't miss out on this splashy opportunity brought to you by Tar Heel Construction Group. Dive into our episodes and win big. You know, a lot of people have dreams. A lot of people pursue them dreams, and sometimes these dreams come true. Other times these dreams come true, and they realize that it's a lot more than they expected. Well, on this episode of Harford County Living with Rich Bennett, I have a young gentleman on, and at one point he was a stand-up comedian. He actually has worked with people such as Louis Black, Paul Reiser, Bob Saget, and even Brad Garrett. True comedy legends. He's even written a book about it, The Opening Act, Comedy Life in the Desperate Pursuit of Happiness. He has also worked with Dan Rodericks, and those of you that live in Maryland, I'm sure you remember Rodericks for Breakfast, which was a show on Channel 2 at the time. But the biggest thing that he's done, at least in my view, is running something that was started by a true icon. And that true icon was his father. And what he's running now is Musicland. So in this episode of Harford County Living with Rich Bennett, I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Larry Noto. And this episode is actually brought to you by Route 24 Ale House. If you haven't been out there yet, you need to get out there. This place has, number one, the best burger I ever had. In all honesty, this burger will just blow you away. It's called the Kickin' Bourbon Burger. It's topped with fried onion caramelized in a Kickin' Bourbon sauce, provolone cheese, bacon. I bit into that thing. It's like, oh, it was like heaven. It's out of this world. They also have some awesome Cajun catfish bites. If you like catfish, you'll love them. All kinds of good stuff. 32 different beers on tap. That's right, 32. Again, Route 24 Ale House. You can find them at Route24AleHouse.com or go to 2A Bel Air South Parkway. That's in Bel Air, Maryland. They're right across the street from the Festival of Bel Air. And actually, if you text ALE, that's A-L-E, to 22452, you'll get $3 off your purchase of $30 or more. Again, text ALE, A-L-E, to 22452 and get $3 off your purchase of $30 or more at Route 24 Ale House.
Welcome to the award-winning podcast, Harford County Living with Rich Bennett, coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios. Each week, you'll hear interesting interviews, commentary, discussions, storytelling, and more. Here's your host, Marine Corps veteran, professional DJ, entrepreneur, podcaster, and my father, Rich Bennett.
I'd like to welcome everybody to Harford County Living with Rich Bennett. So today I am sitting here with a gentleman that a lot of people in Harford County know of him or know him. Some people don't, just like me. And we're blessed for that a lot of people don't know us because it keeps us safe and, you know, out of trouble. But that's another story. But I'm sitting here with Larry Noto of Musicland. So, and Larry, if you've been to Musicland, which is in Bel Air, I'm sure you've seen him there. But then again, you may have seen him some other places, which we're going to go into here very, you know, in a minute. So first of all, welcome, Larry. It's great to finally meet you in person.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So, all right, let's start from the beginning. And I don't mean, yeah, you, when you came out of your mother's womb.
Picture it, Sicily, 1976. I'm just kidding. Wasn't actually Sicily, no. My dad was born in Sicily.
Really?
Yeah, but okay. I was born here in Baltimore. But he was born in Sicily and came over to America when he was 16. To the sort of the Calvert Hall area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wait a minute. So I got to ask now. So at Christmas time,
the Feast of the Seven Fishes, we were very Americanized. So, you know, we had lasagna and pasta and things like that. But
we made pasta?
Not homemade.
Okay.
Not homemade pasta. And we didn't, a lot of Italians do the Feast of the Seven Fishes on Christmas Eve. I thought that's what you were going to ask. We didn't do that.
Really?
Yeah. I think his sisters may have done it. I remember that a little bit. Okay. But he didn't, and my mom didn't. And my mom was born in America, but is Italian as well.
I don't know of many Italian families that still do that, the Feast of the Seven Fishes. The homemade pasta, I know a lot of them that do that.
Yeah.
I know my buddy every Christmas, him and his family get together, they make, they do ravioli from scratch.
Wow.
And I think they do anywhere from, I can't remember the number. I know it's more than 300, but I don't think it's more than 500.
Wow.
So somewhere between 300 and 500.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I do this all the time. I don't know why I always schedule these podcasts right before lunch.
Right.
It's like, God, what am I doing? So, all right. So anyway, so you grew up in Baltimore or
Bel Air. Yeah.
Bel Air.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, lived here my whole life, even though my marketing career was in Baltimore. I went to Loyola, but I commuted. So
Don.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, I went to John Carroll. So I went to Loyola College.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, see, it's weird because you saved Calvert Hall first and then Loyola.
I know.
I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Cardinals and the Dons at it. So.
Yeah, no. my dad went to Calvert Hall, but he could barely speak English.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he was... and I think he went before that, oh gosh, Lady of Pompeii, maybe?
Okay.
And I actually met the gentleman. He came into the store one day. Somebody said, there's always somebody who wants to tell me a story, you know? And he goes, my name's Tommy Moscato, and I taught your father how to speak English. And he was his classmate when he first came over off the boat.
Holy
and the brother God. Said, this is Giuseppe Noto. He's from Italy. Teach him English.
I tell you, man, that's one thing to hear the stories.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is because the stories are slowly fading away.
Yeah.
People aren't keeping in touch. But that's pretty all. Tommy Moscato, why does that name sound
familiar? I don't know. We're friends on Facebook. He's a great guy. And although my father spoke broken English to the day he died, so I said he was the worst English teacher in Baltimore County. But so I always lived in Bel Air my whole life, and I commuted into Baltimore.
Doing marketing.
I worked for, there were sort of two tracks. I had a marketing career and a PR career, first at a small agency in Baltimore, and worked on things like Preakness Celebration and the Arthritis Foundation and National Federation for the Blind. I mean, it was great. It was a small firm, so it was very hands-on. But when the National Federation for the Blind sued America Online to get the ADA to apply to the internet. And this is 19, let's say I graduated in 98, so this is like 2000, 1999, 2000. And it was out of Boston, but I handled the press conference for that.
Wow.
My boss and I and my colleagues and I. So it was really neat to work on it. And they're located in South Baltimore, the National Federation for the Blind.
Oh, I know. I used to fix their computers.
Oh, yeah? It's amazing what they do there.
It is.
It really is amazing with the screen reading technology. And that was, 30 years ago.
To see the blind down there actually work on the computers as well.
Yeah, because they have the screen writing.
Yeah, it's just
But I think at the time, AOL didn't have a... there was some technology that they could use that they weren't using that would adapt to the screen reading software. And so they were asking the courts to apply the ADA to online, which was really groundbreaking at the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so a small PR firm. Then I went to the Baltimore Convention and Visitors Bureau. It was called BACVA at the time. It's called Visit Baltimore now. And I was on the tourism side. So my job was to... work with travel writers, Southern Living Magazine, the travel editor of the New York Times, both here and abroad. And I basically, it was the greatest job ever.
Right.
Because you're 23 and you get to see, you get to show off Baltimore. You get to bring these people to town and you get to go. I got to go to London. I got to go to Germany.
Oh, nice.
And meet with travel writers and tell them about Baltimore. And tell them about the neighborhoods, and tell them about the aquarium, and tell them about the Inner Harbor, and the story, and then bring them here and show them the city, and then they would write travel stories, or do a TV series, right. Or you know, and you got to see the city through the eyes of other people, strangers.
That's got to be pretty neat.
It was neat because they didn't watch the local news and they didn't know about
the problems.
Right, exactly. Right. we would just hide the local news from them and hide the newspapers because it is a tale of two cities.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And that was really my love affair with Baltimore. That and working with Dan Rodericks.
Oh, God.
On his show.
Wow, okay.
The Rodgers for Breakfast show. Do you remember that?
The radio show, not the TV show.
The TV show.
Okay. I remember the TV show very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved watching that.
On Channel 2.
Yeah.
It was Saturday mornings, then it was Sunday mornings. I was with him for 3-4 years. It started as an intern. And then I was an associate field producer, so I would go out with the live shots. And then associate producer, and then eventually one of the producers.
Now, did you learn all that at Loyola?
Well, so the thing about Loyola was they didn't have really a TV program, but right. I had started stand-up comedy at that point, a very little bit.
During college?
Right before college.
Oh,
right
okay.
After the summer between high school and college, a teacher at John Carroll, well, she was one of the music directors, Laura Lang, told me I should do stand-up comedy. And so I had done my first open mic night on Water Street. I wasn't even allowed to drive into the city. I had to have a friend drive me. My parents wouldn't let me drive to Baltimore, which is ironic how I would become the PR person for Baltimore. And I remember working on Rodericks and they said, take 83 to Fells Point. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. What is this? I'm from Bel Air. I have no idea what you're talking 83?
About. What's 83?
What's 83? Yeah. What's Fells Point? So I came a long way, but I know we're bouncing all over the place, but
that's all right.
I had a show at Loyola, and it was like I idolized Letterman. Yeah. So
you have to, especially have as a stand-up.
Yeah, yeah. So the Larry Noto show was born at my freshman orientation, and I would come out and I would do a monologue.
Okay.
And then we'd have three guests. It would be the captain of the soccer team and the head of, you know, the head of student life or something like that. And it was a talk show. And this was before man, I wish it was 20 years later because this was before YouTube and podcasts and you know, and iPhones and, you know, we barely had the internet. We had dial up at that point in 1995. So we couldn't, you know, but, you know, before iMovie and all these things. But a teacher approached me. Loyola was so great because I was constantly just sort of, and John Carroll, because I was just sort of influenced by teachers or random people would come up to me. This random professor came up to me, didn't have me as a student, but knew me from the show. The show had kind of taken off at Loyola.
That's good.
And said, you're that kid with that show, right? her name was Antonio Keene. I think she would be on like Square Off or something with, you know.
Richard Scherr.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
She goes, Dan Rodericks has this show on Channel 2, and I think you two would get along. And literally, that's how it happened.
Wow.
And I just cold called them and said, do you have an intern? And they said no, but we were open to it. And the producer said, why don't you come in and just sit in on an editing session and then a live broadcast? And then that's how I got the internship. And then the next thing I know, I was doing movie reviews on camera, which was like a dream come true.
Wow.
And then field producing and then associate producing producing stories. My first story got nominated for an Emmy.
Really?
A local Emmy. We didn't win, but I got to go to the ceremony.
Still to be nominated.
Nominated,
man,
at 22,
awesome.
And I've never been nominated since, but that's okay. Okay. I don't think I've produced a story since, but just one and done, and went out on a high note. But I'll stop talking now.
Hey, the show's yours. Go ahead, Keep going.
But Rodericks for Breakfast, it connects back to Musicland because I think to understand the cataclysmic change that happened, you had to understand how rooted I was in Baltimore, even though I lived in Harford County was always my home. My career and my life was always promoting the city in some way, whether it was through Rogers for Breakfast or through the Visitors Bureau or then the National Aquarium, where I was for 3 years.
You really were around in Baltimore.
Director of marketing for the aquarium for the last 3 years.
Wow.
And I was very passionate about getting the city on the map. And we were turning a corner. It really was in the mid-2000s. The city, you know, the Ravens had won their second Super Bowl. The Orioles were relevant again. The restaurant scene was booming.
The Inner Harbor, I mean, because wasn't Power Plant there at the time?
Yeah, Power Plant.
So all that was growing.
And Harbor East.
Yeah.
Wow. Dallas Point and Canton. And so it was a really exciting time.
That's got to feel good, though, to be part of all that.
It was until the Freddie Gray riots happened, and it set us back a few decades, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're 100% right there. So with that, now, do you still keep in touch with Dan Rodericks?
Yeah, yeah.
He retired, didn't he?
Well, he retired from the radio, but he still does his Sun column.
Okay, so he's still writing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. God, I missed that show. They need to bring that back.
I know. It was so great. I mean, one minute you'd be with the mayor talking about the gun buyback program, and then the next segment, some guy who makes flower pots and hand ends out of tires. You know, it was very real.
He ought to think about doing it on YouTube or something.
I know. He really should.
All right, Dan, if you're listening to this, come on, get off your tail and bring the show back. I mean, it was great. Because he would have guests on, if I'm not mistaken, you know, like bands.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, it's like, man, it was almost like watching Letterman.
Right.
Like a combination of Letterman and the Today Show, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, and local. I mean, so local, and you just don't have that anymore.
No, we don't. Hey, we need it. Why don't we have something like that in Harford County?
I know, we should. Let's start it. Huh. Let's do it.
Harford Cable Network should be able to do something like that, I would think.
Yeah.
Man. All right, when did you leave your, because National Aquarium was your last job in Baltimore?
Yeah.
All right, so when did you leave that?
So, the Freddie Gray riots happened on the exact day that my father started to turn the business over. It's a really powerful story, and a really powerful moment because, you know, he was at the end. He had throat cancer.
I didn't realize that's what it was.
Yeah, okay. And he had throat cancer, and he could no longer talk at that point, so he had a little whiteboard that he would write everything down. And it was a sole proprietorship. So it had to become a corporation.
Yeah.
And so I, of all days, left the city, or I was always in the city. I left the city early that day to meet with my mom and my father and the lawyer to start working on the paperwork for it to become an S corporation. And it was in that meeting when we decided to call it Joe Noto's Music Land Inc. So his name was always a part
always
of it.
Always on it.
So he knew that his name would always be a part of his baby, no matter what happened to it. We had no idea what was going to happen with the store still, even with just weeks left of his life. And it was in that meeting that my phone starts blowing up saying, the city is in chaos, the CVS is on fire. And so I watched my father start to say goodbye to his life's work. And I went home and I watched the news of the riots and the fires. And I knew in my heart that I was saying goodbye to my life's work because it was like worse than any breakup I've ever had. It was watching a loved one, you know, die.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're leaving something that you love, that you worked so hard on.
And I knew the perception, you know, particularly, you know, I'm sure you hear it around here. Like, I'm not going to go to the city. It's not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said there were people in London that thought better of Baltimore than people in Harford County. And I knew that this would just set the city back at least a decade in terms of perception, safety perception. And so I think I knew in my heart that night I knew what I was going to do. So that began the process. I was doing both. I was running the store and working at the aquarium. For a couple of months, maybe, right. A month or two. And then it got to the point where it really realized that I had to get in there and get my hands dirty.
Yeah.
And things weren't great at the aquarium, and it was a tough time to be in tourism marketing. So all the signs led to you should be with your family.
Yeah.
You should be back home, and you should take over this thing and see what you can do with it.
Now at this time, were you actually living in Baltimore or still living in Bel Air?
I
so you never actually moved out
of
Bel Air?
No, I never. Yep. Okay. I lived in Abingdon. I had a townhouse close to 95.
Okay.
And sort of by constant friendship. It was called Monmouth Meadows.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so I lived at home for a while, and then I lived there for 14 years.
Man, that had to be hard. To leave Baltimore, but I guess in a way it was a calling.
It was a call. It was a calling, and it was this giant sign from above that this was the right thing.
Right.
So, you know, I had always talked about working with my father in some way, and we probably would have killed each other. But he was very set in his way. It was his baby, and it was his way. You know, and I would say to him, I'm working my butt off for other people and making them a lot of money, and imagine what we could do together. And he would talk about it, and I would talk about it, but I think we both knew that we would just clash heads because it was, he didn't want to release control. So the fact that all of this happened exactly when it happened and the way it happened was a calling is a good way to put it. It was really the sign from above that I was supposed to be with my family at this point and be there for them and be there for the store. And it probably would have been actually 10 times harder had it not been for the riots and all that, because it would have been a hard decision to make to leave the city.
Yeah.
Leave the city.
Yeah. I got to tell you this, because I went to Musicland, oh my God, I forget how long ago, and met your father, one of the nicest people I ever met.
Thank you.
It seems like he didn't mind talking to the customers.
Oh, he loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what people don't realize is that, see, I'm in the back a little bit more. I'm behind the scenes, and I have an office because there's a lot of paperwork to do. But he would do his paperwork. He never went to bed. He would open the store at 10 a.m. He would close it at 9. He wouldn't get home until after 10 o'clock at night. And then he would just sit on the couch all night and do – that's when he would do his bills and emails and paperwork and things like that, is all night long. I very rarely saw him asleep in a bed.
I was going to say, when did he ever sleep?
He didn't. Or he would fall asleep on the couch sitting up with the news on, surrounded by his printer and his laptop and his briefcase.
He was a workaholic.
Yeah, he was. Musicland was his life.
What year did he start that?
This is our 50th anniversary.
Really?
Yeah, so 1971 in Bel Air.
Wow.
Yeah, he had a little store, not a little store, but he had a store in Govan's in Baltimore before he came to Bel Air, called Govan's Music. And he taught at another store and did private lessons, and it was on York Road by the Senator.
Okay.
And then for some reason, somebody told him you should check out, Govan's was starting to turn a little bit.
Right.
And somebody said you should check out Bel Air, and so he opened it on Bond Street. There was a little house on the corner on Bond Street. It's not there anymore, but 1971, and he called it Musicland.
Wow! Holy cow! I didn't realize it's been 50 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So when did he move to the location where you guys are at now? By the mall, right?
Yeah. So he was in Bond Street, and then in the late 70s, he moved to Rock Spring Shopping Center.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a couple different locations in Rock Spring. He moved into a bigger space.
Right.
And there's Manny's Sub Shop that was there.
Wow.
Yep. And then in 1989, he built the building that we're in now. So we've been there for
that building.
Yes. Yeah. Built. Okay. He actually bought the land with a partner and built the building.
Okay.
And we had half the building, and the partner had the other half and rented it out to a sign shop, All Signs Now, in Berlaine's dog grooming business.
Okay.
And then I would say 15 years ago, maybe, he bought the partner out and took over the entire building, but didn't really do it a lot with it.
Didn't expand the store.
He wanted to, but he never got to it. And that's one of the things I did when I came in, was broke through and expanded the store. So we now utilize the whole building.
Put a stage in and everything.
Put the stage in, Musicland Live, yeah.
Well, before we get to
before
we get to Musicland, so are you still doing stand-up at all?
Yeah, I do it occasionally, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, not a ton. I never did it constantly. I never did it every week, you know, but I would go out a few times a year, and when I was younger, I would get up to New York and do some stuff in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would. Particularly, there was a period where I was working for a hotel group for 10 years.
Okay.
And we had hotels in Boston and Providence. And then I was dating a girl in New York, in Manhattan. So it was perfect because I would schedule meetings on Thursday and Friday in Providence and Boston, and then take the train and then get into New York, see the girl, do some shows, you know. So I actually, one of my, there's a couple of good stories, but I did a, they're called showcases, where you basically, if you have 7 minutes of material and you can bring five people to watch you, they'll give you stage time.
Really?
But it's a, it's called a bringer show.
Okay.
And they're, sometimes they're frowned upon because they're, you know, they're whatever, but it's at Caroline's in Times Square in New York, and you never know who's going to be in the audience.
Yeah.
So this was like a Monday night. I took the train home Tuesday morning, you know, and I did the show Monday night at Caroline's, and Tuesday I'm in my office at the Admiral Fell Inn in Fells Point, and CBS primetime casting calls.
No way.
I swear to you. And they said, we were at the show last night. We liked what we saw. We want you to come in and read for a sitcom. And they they sent me a script. I had to take the train back on Friday. And what they do is they just record you and they just put you on a shelf.
Right.
And it's not even for a specific show. It's just to have you in
just
their
reading.
You in their library. But it was a cool experience. I remember sitting in the waiting room, and there was this girl next to me, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, you were just on How I Met Your Mother." She had like a story arc of like, you know, six episodes, and I had a huge crush on her. I was like, "Oh my god, you're that girl." I was like, "Oh my god, you're that girl from How I Met Your Mother." Like, I'm in love with you.
I was going to say, that's got to be awkward.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you ever watching Practical Jokers? Mm-hmm. The one where Murray, oh God, what was the girl's name from, I think from the Wonder Years?
Oh, yeah.
And they brought her in and he had no idea, and they sent him in there in a Speedo. Because he always had a crush on her.
Yeah.
I think I would have turned blood red. I wouldn't know what to say. So, but you've also written a book, right?
Yep, yeah.
Just one so far?
Just one, although we are working on a second one for the 50th anniversary.
Like the way I said so far?
Yeah. We're working on the book for the 50th anniversary.
Okay. Oh, my God. I know that's got to be four stories.
It's going to be great. It's going to get great pictures, too. Him in Italy, right. My father in Sicily, and oh, wow. The early days and all that. But the first book was an idea I had. I was very lucky that, particularly when the Improv was in town, was mm-hmm. in Baltimore, that I got to work with, you know, Richard Lewis, Lewis Black, Bob Saget, Louis Anderson, Jay Moore, Paul Reiser, Brad Garrett, you know, so, but I was always the book is called, the book is called The Opening Act, Comedy, Life, and the Desperate Pursuit of Happiness. And it's one chapter is like a comedy bit, you know,
right.
Like, because a lot of my bits are stories, so they it was interesting to see what they transcribed to the page.
Yeah.
And I think they did. And then the next chapter is a narrative about just, you know, I realized that I love stand up and I love doing it, but I don't think I would love doing it full time.
Full time, yeah.
So the book touches on that, about sort of getting a taste, these stories like the CBS thing that happened.
Right.
And, but not really going for it, you know, never, you know, quitting the day job, so to speak, and moving to New York or L.A. and trying to be a comic.
It's a tough business.
It's a tough business. And living out of hotel rooms and traveling and going to, you know, these one night gigs in Alabama and then driving 10 hours to the next gig. And that was not the life for me.
I always say a comedian's, if you're a full-time comedian, your job is like, and you're probably going to laugh at me here, is like a full-time WWE wrestler.
Okay.
Because you're on the road all the time.
Yeah.
You got to pay for your own travel and everything. And it can kill you.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it is, and it's weird. It's like you, all the time and hours you put into it, and not only that, time away from family and friends.
Right.
It's almost as if you don't get the amount of appreciation you should.
Right, right.
Am I wrong there?
Well, no. I mean, and there's comics that have been, you know, that's all they do. I mean, you know, the would be great to get the sitcom and the movie deal and all that, but they're just comics that just do the club circuit. And that's all they do. And I always tell the story. I was very, very lucky that so I got to work with Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond. Him. He's so great, man. And it was the nicest guy in the world. So we worked
big
together.
As hell too.
Oh my gosh! I'm almost like I was almost embarrassed to post the picture because I come down, you know. So I introduced Brad Garrett, and I don't adjust the microphone, and he comes up, and it came up to about his belly button. And he did the first 3 minutes like soft talking, like,
right.
You know, like looking down at the mic. It was hysterical. But this was down at Ram's Head in Annapolis.
Yeah.
Who they've been very, very good to me. And,
it's the original one, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yep. And I think it's called Ram's Head on Stage. And so in between the two shows, he says, you know, he goes, really, you know, great job, you know. And I go, thank you. And he goes, no, I mean it. I'm not just saying that. I said to my friend, I'm screwed. This kid's going to make me work tonight. And I was like, wow, you know? And he goes, I have
that's
a club.
That's going to be a good compliment.
He goes, I have a club in Las Vegas. I go, I know. And he goes, I'd love for you to come do a week.
Really?
This is like the moment you wait for as a comic, as a young comic, for like one of these big guys to say,
wow,
come with me on the road or something like that.
Yeah.
But I bring it up because, so I did this week in Las Vegas.
This is in your book as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. And okay. I do this, it's an important story because obviously from a comedian standpoint, playing Las Vegas on the Strip, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a dream come true. But every night of the, my family flew out, friends flew out from California, from Florida. So every night of the week, I had a friend or a family member in the audience and we would have dinner before or go out mm-hmm. afterwards. And I realized if I was a real comedian, this would not be the case. I'd be alone in a hotel room, you know, and drive it on to the next one. And so I realized what was important was the fact that I actually had those friends and family.
Yeah.
As much as the event was important, it was more so that I had people in my life to share it with.
It's nice to spend time with people.
Yeah, it is. It is. So the book touches on that and
right.
then, and ends with the transition over to taking over the store.
So when did the book come out?
Oh gosh, I guess it's been 5 years now, because it was right after I took over. It might be 5 or 6 years now.
Now, is it on Amazon, Barnes
yeah.
Noble, and all that?
Yeah, okay. It should still be on there. Yeah,
I'll make sure I'll have to put a link, and people can get it at the store too, right?
Yep, yeah, of course, right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll have a link for
and
that.
I know the Bel Air Barnes and Noble has it.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure they still have.
So now I got to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I should
have
brought
definitely
you a copy. I'm sorry.
It. Oh, that's okay. No. As a matter of fact, because I'm going to have to introduce you to somebody when the second book comes out. She's an award-winning author, a editor. She's edited hundreds of books. And she started her own podcast called The Word with an Inquisitive Book Nerd.
Okay.
But she's had different people on there. She's interviewed, oh, God, I'm going to forget the guy's name. Nathan something. He wrote a book with Tony Dungy.
Oh, okay.
She's been trying to get Richard on, Chismar.
Right.
And right now, you know how hard it is to try. Richard just wrote the book, Chasing the Boogeyman.
Okay.
From Edgewood. But trying to get a hold of him right now is like pulling teeth. He's just running everywhere. And I think he does a lot with Stephen King, too. So.
And the book was co-written with Kevin Cowherd from the Baltimore Sun. Do you remember
Oh,
Kevin?
Yes. Yeah. I remember that name.
Yeah. He okay. had a column in the Baltimore Sun. And he was on Roderick's a lot. So I knew him back from those days. And he had written a book on Ed Hale. Called Hailstorm, which is a great read. Kevin's a great writer. And
is he still around here?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's still in Baltimore. He left the Sun. He took the buyout,
okay.
You know, when they were cutting back. But so he had published that through Loyola, which is where I went. And so we had a little meeting, the guy from Loyola, Kevin Addicks, and Kevin Cowherd and myself. And Loyola basically said, well, we love Kevin, and we know you. So if you guys can work a deal out, then we'll publish it. So Kevin was great, and we would just meet at a diner, and I would just tell the stories.
Right.
And then he would go off and write, and then we would edit. And
you got to put me in touch with him.
Okay.
Actually, I'd like to sit down with both of you one time and just – because I'm sure together you guys probably got a ton of stories to tell.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Roderick's.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That would be scary, though, getting him on here. So now when are you expecting the second book to come out?
Well, we hit a little bump and over the summer, so we kind of put it on hold for a little bit. But so I would say early next year.
Okay.
Yeah. We were shooting for the fall, but now we didn't get it done. And then it's our back to school season and the holiday season.
Right.
So it's 80% done.
Okay.
It's 80% written.
All right. Did you ever think you would end up doing that, writing a book?
It was a dream.
Really?
I had the book idea for the first book for 10 years. And then we have an idea for a children's book that we're probably going to tackle after the 50th anniversary.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I've always wanted to do it. And it's great. I mean, it's to hold it in your hand, to have
yeah.
it, you know, to say, we, you know, we finally accomplished it was great.
So did you, like, during high school, were you on the school newspaper or anything?
Yeah, I did that and a lot of acting and debate and things like that.
And you graduated in 98?
94 from John Carroll.
94.
Yeah.
With comedy, because everybody always has somebody that influenced them to get into comedy. Yeah. Who was yours?
Well, I was always, you know, always people say Pryor and Carlin, but I wasn't raised on them. I was raised more on, you know, unfortunately what happened with Bill Cosby. But if you just put that aside for a second.
200 miles per hour, yeah, chicken heart.
If you just say Bill Cosby, the comedian, before everything yeah. happened. And unfortunately, all my comedians have great controversy around them. So Woody Allen was a huge influence
oh,
on
wow.
me comedically.
Yeah.
You know, so I was raised on like Peter Sellers and Mel Brooks.
Oh,
and,
God.
And guys like that,
right?
And versus Carlin and Pryor, and so and Abbott Costello and Sid Caesar and
oh man,
yeah, like really great old school comedians.
Yes.
That my parents, my mom and my dad and my grandfather would introduce me to, and then you know Jerry Seinfeld and
yeah.
Larry David and then these today guys like Brian Regan and Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, Jim Gaffigan is
he's
awesome.
Great. You know, he's so great. So, you know, so storytellers, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, more like that.
Yeah. One of the ones I've always loved, but it was kind of hard to follow at times, was Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah, right.
It just because I
saw him live
wow.
in D.C. and it was you missed half the material because
yeah.
because he was going so fast. I mean,
that man had it's like he was a coffee factory or whatever. So I'm going to be nice to say he had so much caffeine in him.
Right.
You know, but oh, my God, he was crazy. But Abner Costello always loved it. And actually, two of my teachers from when I went to broadcasting school, you may know him. Ended up, they were doing Abbott and Costello around here locally for the longest time.
Oh, okay.
Bill Riley and Joe Ziegler.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Joe has passed away. Oh. But they, and Spitting Image, especially Joe Ziegler, he was a spitting.
I wonder if those are the guys we used to have on Rogers for Breakfast. Because
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I know exactly who you're
yep.
talking about.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know he passed. Them. Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I want to say he's probably within the past 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Had to be. Mm. Yeah, it was very sad, but. Yeah, I mean,
they would have
guys
them out
at
Camden Yards too, like
yes.
opening day,
and on the ship to John Brown,
yeah,
down there.
Oh gosh,
oh yeah, they were great, and but yeah, Abbott and Costello, and I still watch Abbott and Costello on TV.
Yeah.
You got to. I mean, you cannot. When it comes to, and I'm old school like you, Abbott and Costello. I love the Three Stooges, which
right.
my wife looks at me and says, "That's not funny." You know, I sat her down. I said, "Look, you got to sit down and watch this movie with me." I said, it's hilarious because her sister loves it too. So I guess she figured if my sister thought it was funny, then I will. She didn't make it through halfway through the movie. It was Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, right.
I mean, one of the greatest comedies ever written, you know?
Right.
Of course, my son watched it. When he watched it, he was young. He was like 13. He's watching it. He is cracking up until the very end. Yeah, when the cops
right.
call and lock everybody up, he's like, well, that was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
I said, dude, that's Monty Python.
Right.
You know, now for something completely different.
Right.
So, but, oh, geez. Well, and I'm glad, and I'm sure your family's glad that you didn't do comedy full time.
Yeah.
Because now you got, you know, now you're running the store.
Yep.
And well, tell us about how the store has gone through the changes.
Well, I think one of the biggest changes is that we had to completely change the way we operated
mm-hmm.
because before it was my dad and he was there every minute of the day.
Yes.
And he controlled everything. And there was a couple guys that would work out front with him. And,
right.
And he, but even long-term guys weren't really empowered to do a lot.
Yeah.
So we had to really, it's a team approach now.
Mm-hmm.
Just like now. I mean, I'm not at the store right now. It opens without me. I close every night.
Right.
But I don't open. And And I can be involved in the community. I'm on some boards and things like that. So last night I went to a board meeting for SIAB, the Society of Italian American Businessmen.
Yep, and I've actually featured them as Nonprofit of the Week.
Oh, really?
A couple times.
It's great, great, great group of guys.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, the most generous group of guys I've ever met. And so everyone has their sort of individual responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So this guy does ordering, and this guy does web sales, and this guy does the repair shop, and this guy's in charge of lessons. So we sort of assigned responsibilities, almost like team captains, if you will.
Right.
And created a leadership team. But then everybody can do everything too.
Yeah.
So, it's a weird business because this person will walk in and it will be a parent who has never been in a music store before. And they're looking for reeds. They don't even know what a reed is. They just know that they have a piece of paper from the teacher that says they need to get reeds. And then the next person will want to buy a $2,500 American-made Fender, and there's a 19-year-old working there that can handle everything now.
Really?
I have high school kids that sell, $3,000 guitars. They know more than I do because we've hired kids that
truly love the music.
They're kind of gearheads,
right?
And their knowledge is blows me away. I mean, you have to understand, when I took over, I didn't know the difference between a Stratocaster and Telecaster. I didn't even know.
Really?
I didn't know what those were.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, people, I don't think people understand how cold it was, how cold I went into this. I would go,
that's pretty amazing, though.
Yeah, they would say, this is a Stratocaster and this is a Telecaster. And I'm like, okay, what? And how do I tell the difference? And what are you talking about?
Well, and a lot of people think that, when you look at different guitars like that, the guitar just looks different.
Right.
No, it sounds different, too. And a lot of people don't understand that.
The big joke is a humbucker. Like, I still don't quite understand. I'm like, a what? A hum what? A humbucker? And a double humbucker? And
there's a stand-up routine there.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea what they were talking about. And so they joke. The guys,
those are pickups on the guitars, people, in case you don't know.
Yes, exactly. But they joke that when I interview the particularly the kids, and I ask them, so do you know what a humbucker is? And they almost say, like, if they do know what it is, they get hired. Like, that's,
right.
That's the point of the barrier of entry to working in Musicland is, as long as you know what a humbucker is, you can work there. So, yeah.
So, all right. Have you guys always done lessons there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, he was one of the original teachers. My dad. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you guys teach all instruments?
Or? Yeah, I think we have everything but a banjo teacher right now.
Really?
Yeah. Violin, clarinet.
What about as far as vocals?
Voice. Yeah, we have a voice teacher.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys did all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we're up to like 15 or 16 teachers now.
So, do you guys in the building? Well, especially since you expanded, do you have separate like classrooms?
Yeah, there's 8 rooms. Yeah, there's 8 rooms. The 6 original, and then he actually added, when he took over that other part of the building, he did add 2 more.
Right.
So the 8 rooms were always there.
Now, do you guys do, because I've seen, like, what the school my son went to, they'll put kids together to, form a band. Do you guys do that?
We haven't yet. A couple of times, some of the teachers did like a joint jam session.
Well, which is still
great. Yeah, that was great. We don't do it as much as I'd like us to do.
Right.
It's definitely because we built this group classroom and like summer camps and like School of Rock.
Yeah.
It's all stuff we want to do. We just haven't gotten to it. But we need to do more of it.
Yeah. I know that's one of the things that my son loved, because where he went, they took the kids, put them together, and they would actually form bands.
Right.
They would play the record theater and all these festivals and everything. And to this day, because he was, 16? He's 28 now. And he still loves doing it. He doesn't play with them guys anymore. Well, sometimes he will play with, like, the drummer and the one guitarist that was originally in that band.
Right.
Now he does it more as a hobby than anything. I know him and I think it's his stepfather's brother or something. They have a group of them that'll get together and they'll donate their time and play these festivals for free.
Okay.
Which he doesn't mind doing it.
The closest thing
wants me to pay him when he DJs for me.
Yeah. The closest thing is we do our open mic nights on Wednesday.
You're still doing that?
Well, we stop in September and October because of back to school. because we use that room for the rentals. But yeah, we started back up in May.
Okay.
And but musicians will meet there, and we've had a couple of bands form, at least two or three bands that have formed from meeting at open mic night. Yeah. In fact,
that's
our host, good. Joe Paleo, has a band called Rough House, and they formed with Joe. He started sitting in with them during open mic night. He's the host, and they formed a band.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, which is
so
great.
All right, with that, do you ever get like certain musicians that will come in and do like workshops or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, we've had Michael Battio, the guy who plays the double neck guitar.
No way.
Yeah, he came. He did a clinic.
He's got more than a double neck. I think he's got one that's got like four necks or something. That guy is freaking awesome,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he came in. That was a great clinic.
How'd you get in touch with him?
He is an endorsee of Dean Guitars.
Oh, okay.
So we got him through Dean.
Man, I'm glad you mentioned that name because I used to watch his videos all the time.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched him in years.
Yeah.
That guy's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. No, he was great. He was super nice. And
now I remember he had one. It was like two arms. It was like four arms.
Yeah.
God, I mean, it's like, how in the hell? It was almost like watching, oh my God. Can't believe his name went right out of my head from Cheap Trick, the guitar player.
I can't remember either.
Rick something. Whatever. Anyways, all right, go ahead.
He signed guitars to some people. Some people bought them that night and signed them, and some people brought them.
All right, so you've had him, and who else have you guys had?
Well, we had Paul Reed Smith.
No.
Yeah.
Did he carry his guitars?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I hope so, because you can't have him in there and not have his guitars.
What's funny is that to get him through PRS, you have to be a certain level dealer, which we're just getting to be.
Right.
But we got him through, how did we get him?
Oh, he's still over on the Eastern Shore,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got him through his band.
Okay.
It was actually an interesting kind of story because the band was like, where does the Paul Reed Smith band start and where does Paul from PRS begin and end, you know? So we got the band, Gary Granger is his bass player, and wanted to do a gig there. And PRS was sort of like, well, they're not really quite on the tier yet. And he was sort of like, well, it's my band and we can play where we want to. So,
hey, that's telling them.
Yeah. But anyways, he didn't do a clinic, but he did a whole concert with his band.
That's still pretty neat. And,
awesome.
And I mean, that's, of course, that's going to draw people in.
Yeah. We had a great time.
And did it bring you up a tier with him?
Well, we're not because of that, but just because the sales are growing.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
People see that. They're like, oh, wait a minute. Paul Reed Smith was there.
Yeah.
They must have PRS guitars.
Exactly.
Because I think every guitar player dreams of owning a PRS.
Yeah. And they have a core level, which is what we're getting into now.
Okay.
The $3,000-$4,000 guitars. So we'll be carrying those as soon as they come in. The biggest challenge this year has been inventory. You can't get anything. It's 6 months to a year for a guitar.
Really?
Because of all the backups with COVID and the labor shortage and the factory closings and the chip shortage and the dock workers, and it's been a mess.
Wait a minute, chips and guitar?
Well, like
then again,
chips,
who knows now?
Electronics and chips and like QSC speakers, we can't even place an order. Like they won't come till next summer.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a mess.
I was wondering about that because keyboards and all that. And with the schools, not a lot of kids are renting the instruments like they were.
We'll see. We'll know more in about 4 weeks,
right?
These next 4 weeks.
But
last year they dropped out.
So what were you guys doing to make up for that? Cause I know you had to think outside of the box.
Well, I mean, the good news is that the guitar industry boomed.
Yeah.
Because everybody was at home and they didn't have anything to do.
Wanted
and so
to pick up a new hobby.
Everyone, the hobbyists came out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
So industry-wide, that boomed. And that kind of made up for it.
Good.
But this year it's definitely hurt because of the residual effects of the kids dropping out of school, of band. And so we're feeling it. We felt it over the summer a lot. So we're hoping that this is a good back to school season.
Yeah.
It's usually right now till mid-October is sort of the target. And we're just hoping that it comes back. We certainly have the we have the instruments, you know.
It definitely will.
And then, you know, it's sort of like having apartment rooms with no one renting them, because we have a huge fleet of instruments, thousands of band and orchestra instruments. We just won't buy as many next year and the year after. But it will take a year or two for the remnants effect to feel that, the benefit of that.
Now, since you guys actually do repairs, do you guys get instruments donated to you?
Usually what we do is we refer them to Band Together, which is a nonprofit that, that gives instruments to less fortunate kids in the county. So if they're looking to donate, we usually refer them to Band Together.
Okay. And I only ask that because, you know, if you doing repairs, some people, like my son, I know after a while he'll get tired of one of his guitars and get rid of it.
Right.
Usually he would trade it in. There used to be another music store, small one, that was in White Marsh. I think they closed down. And he would trade it in there. He better not have ever taken them to a pawn shop.
There's a music around in Cockeysville. We kind of refer people to there.
They're still there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And they refer people to us, and we refer people to them.
Okay. I didn't realize they were still there.
Yeah.
Last time I saw them was, when I worked at the Bay. So that was 2012. That was a long time ago. Wow. All right. So what's your – any future plans for Musicland?
Well, you know, we had a lot of plans around the 50th, and COVID kind of, you know, put a damper
stupid
on them.
COVID.
I know, stupid COVID. We would love to do a big festival in the parking lot. And we've been talking about it for years. And so as long as the funds are there and the resources are there, our goal is to do it in May of 2022. And that be sort of the culmination of our 50th anniversary. So food trucks, bands, sort of thing, and make it an annual. It's called Festival Music. And the idea is to have three stages, a main stage, a little kind of coffee house acoustic stage, and then maybe classical stuff inside. And have three stages going. So
classical stuff.
Well, you know, like violins or, you know.
You gonna get Sheldon Bear down there?
Yeah,
to do
exactly.
Something?
Yeah.
Oh, you know Sheldon. Yeah, sure. Everybody knows Sheldon.
Sheldon is on our list for our Musicland in the Lincoln. He's he'll be our, not our next guest, but our following guest.
I gotta get a hold. He's been on the podcast several times. I gotta get a hold of it. Well, didn't he step down as?
I don't think so.
He's still the director.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the SSO, yeah.
Yeah. God, I've seen them, took my daughter, it was their Christmas show, it was of course before COVID, and first time I saw them, I was amazed.
They did it great. They were, I was very honored to be asked to read the Night Before Christmas.
Okay.
They do a musical accompaniment with it.
Yeah.
And you read the poem while they play, and that was like a highlight.
I think the year I went there, I think Gary Helton, who at the time was, you know, a station manager at WHSC, was doing it. So,
okay, cool.
Man, I definitely got to get out there to see. Wait a minute. You're going to have him in the Lincoln with you?
Yes.
And I think he wants. That's going to be scary.
Well, have you seen his car? I think it's a Camaro. Yeah. I think
Camaro?
Yeah.
No.
What is it?
He always came up here in a, Mercury?
Oh, no, he has this muscle car now.
What?
Yeah, I'll show you a picture. I'll pull it up.
Oh,
yeah.
Sheldon, you've been holding out on me? Don't even tell me it's a 69.
No. It's not. It's a new one. It's a new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, so I think he wants to get Noto and a Camaro. But
so the Lincoln, tell everybody about this, because I love this. I watched a couple of the videos. And it's almost like watching
It's comedians in cars getting coffee or carpool karaoke.
It's like a combination of carpool karaoke and having Seinfeld in the car.
So. It's a ripoff of both of those things. But that's all right, right? The best
as long as Kramer ain't driving.
Is that right? As long as we don't get sued. But my great uncle, John Sansone, passed away a couple years ago. He left me this 1990 Lincoln Town Car. And we always had this idea of doing music. It was going to be Musicland in a van, because we have this van.
Right.
And the idea was we would drive around and pick up local musicians and then play in the car. And that's basically rip off carpool karaoke.
Right.
And but then we got the Lincoln, and we thought it would be fun to do Musicland in a Lincoln. So basically, We pick up a local musician or someone in the music industry, mm-hmm. and we drive around and we interview them. It's kind of like our podcast that we do, and we do one a month. We're on our third episode. We're about to form our fourth one with Brad Cox. Will be our next guest. Breaking news. I'm breaking that here for you.
Oh, man. Sorry. Who were your first three guests?
We had Mike Newberry.
Okay.
And then we had Jeff Mullen from Sons of Pirates. Mm-hmm. And then Shea Welsh, who is Bel Air born, but he lives in L.A. And
you drove all the way to L.A.?
Yeah, I know, right? we were going to take – he actually changed his flight. He was here for his mom's 80th birthday. He was supposed to fly out on a Thursday. We couldn't do it till Friday. So he changed his whole flight to be in. He goes, I want to be in this Lincoln so bad. I'll change my flight. And he's done so much in L.A. And he's basically become the guitar teacher to the stars. So he taught like Tom Hanks and Norman Lear and Julia Louis-Dreyfus's kids.
Really?
Yeah. So how to play guitar. So Jim Carrey's kids, I think.
Well, let me see. That Lincoln, you can fit three in the – technically, because that's got the bench seat in the front, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can fit six people in there.
What you don't know is our sound guy is laying on the floor in the back seat while we're recording.
All right, maybe not six comfortably then. So, yeah. All right, never mind. So just keep it to the front seat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So who – all right, because I – and this is something that amazes me since I started Harford County Living, how many talented musicians there are.
Oh, absolutely.
Not just here, but from here. So who are some of your dream guests for this?
Oh, wow. Well, we would love to get, like, Paul Reed Smith. That would be amazing.
That would be
amazing.
Yeah.
And
hey, he said he'll even drive down to the Eastern Shore.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, like, Chris Martin from the Martin Factory would be.
Oh, wow.
That would be amazing. But, I think we have to get a little bit more established before we go out that route. But, you know, I mean, there's classic guys like Dennis Shockett and Spike Settles. And we're going to ask them eventually. Little do they know, there's a list. Their name was on it.
Yeah, I know. I always have my dream list too. Right. Now you run the store.
Yep.
So from doing comedy, doing PR, you know, working with Roderick's, have you picked up an instrument yet and learned it?
That is a very good question. I was always a drummer, so I did get behind the set. We did a Christmas video where we did some Christmas songs, and I did get behind the set for the first time in a long time. And play the drums, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. And I would like to learn to play the guitar. I don't think I have it, but I'm going to still try. But my few attempts, it's a very difficult thing. And I have rhythm, but for some reason, I just, you know, this left hand doesn't want to do what it's supposed to do.
Right.
And it doesn't, my brain, you know, my sister is a wonderful musician, and she really got the gift. She's a pianist, she's the band and orchestra director at Patterson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's an amazing voice. She really got the gift.
Yeah.
You know, she really got the gift. And
but she's not the comic.
Right. Right. I think the entertainer came out in that way with me. And but I would like to learn at least a little guitar.
Yeah.
And I keep saying I'm going to take lessons, but it hasn't happened yet. I took a guitar home during COVID, but I ended up being busier during COVID because I was running the store out of my house.
And, oh, wow.
Well, yeah, because the rentals still had to be run.
Yeah.
And then people were emailing us constantly, my guitar's in the shop, I need it, or can you bring me this book? My son needs it. So I was delivering stuff door to door, meeting people in parking lots. The guy had my guitar's in the shop, but I need it back. So I met him in the, you know, the Bob Evans parking lot out of the back of my truck.
You know what, though? People remember that. You talk, you know, customer service.
Yeah.
That is customer service. That just goes to show you care about your customers.
Yeah.
I'm sure other places would be like, no, you have to wait till we open up.
Right.
You know.
You
can still play the guitar.
Yeah. No, it's on my bucket list. It is.
Yeah.
No excuses.
I know I miss it. The first thing I played was the drums. Loved the drums. And, of course, my parents wouldn't buy me a drum set. Luckily, my older brother had the drum set. So that's how I picked it up. And then what did I do? I went from drums to guitar to keyboard to bass. Bass was always my favorite. And I felt bad because my son, I always say my son is Stevie Ray Vaughan reincarnated. He's that good. So him and my wife and him and my daughter got me a bass guitar for my birthday one year, but I couldn't play it. I just, arthritis.
Right.
It was just, it was tough to play. And now it's just sitting downstairs in the case. It's like, I can't get rid of it. Right. Yeah, because they got it for me, but it's like, no. I'll stick with the DJing part. Yeah, but, no, pick it up. I know, it's funny that you mention it, because I know a lot of people that that I know that started playing guitar or even keyboard, piano, when COVID started.
Right.
And it's, granted, it takes time. It takes a lot of practice. I mean, my son started when he was 13. He's 28 now, but he still practices every day. You never stop. It's not that hard. You don't have to be, like Stevie Ray and play lead or anything.
Play a few chords and that kind of thing.
You can do it. You can do it. I know you can.
Vote of confidence.
You got to be like, who's the one comedian? Stephen Lynch, I think, plays guitar. So you got to go on stage with the guitar, even if it sounds bad. I mean,
it's one way to get laughs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many times did, what's his name, Henny Youngman? How he said the violin. How many times did he actually play the violin?
Right.
Or did he? Jack Benny was, no, I think Jack Benny did play the violin. Or Tiny Tim did play that ukulele.
Yeah.
So tell everybody with Music Land how to get in touch with you guys, whether it's for music lessons. Actually, let's talk about inventory first. So you guys carry a little bit of everything, drum sets, guitars, mm-hmm. bass, mm-hmm. definitely the violins, trumpets, saxophones, yeah. mm-hmm. which is something, and I'm not going to mention the name of the store, but one of those guitar places, they don't carry all that stuff.
Right. Well, they own another store that, we might as well just say it's Music and Arts, and that's their sort of band and orchestra. Guitar Center owns Music and Arts.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think they own Musician's Friend, too, I think.
Yeah, but none of them are around here.
Music and Arts is in the festival.
It is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so that's their sort of band and orchestra wing.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's two separate stores.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but see, you guys have everything.
Yeah.
So people just need to, and keeping it local.
Local.
If they go to you, they're supporting local.
Exactly.
Not just a local business, but local families as well. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Jeez. Come on, people. All right. So tell everybody the address of the website.
It's www.musiclandstore.com. And we're on Facebook and Instagram. And those are the best ways. Yeah.
And definitely watch the videos with the, what's it called again? With the Lincoln.
Music Land and the Lincoln.
Get his book. Definitely got to get his book, because otherwise he's going to yell at me. So you have anything to add, Larry?
No, this is great. I really appreciate it. And I just, I just appreciate everyone's support. It's been, when we took over, we didn't know what to expect and what would Music Land be like without Joe Noto, and how would people respond to that? I mean, there are still people that walk. It happened last week. A guy walked in, hadn't been in town for a while, and he just expected to see him. And when he realized what happened, he just broke down in tears.
Right.
And so, could the store function without him? And would people support us without him? And people have been just tremendously supportive of us. We're just very grateful for that.
Well, and the thing is, with your father, anybody, and they don't necessarily have to be from Harford County, but anybody that knows the store, musicians, your father's a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely a legend. And the good thing is, you're keeping his legacy going on.
Yeah.
And when you told me the bit about Joe Noto, was it Joe Noto Music Incorporated?
Yeah, Joe Noto's Music Land, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... That touched me in the heart because that's
on the receipt. Great. So when the receipts come out, it says Joe Noto's Music Land. And we still mark it as Music Land. But we have my buddy Garth Gerhardt, who does all our graphic design, mm-hmm. did a caricature of him. So we have t-shirts with him, coffee mugs with his logo, with his caricature on it. And coming soon for the 50th anniversary, Joe Noto the bobblehead.
No way.
Yep.
Are you serious?
And he's holding an accordion. because that was his instrument. Wow. So yeah, and it's got the 50th anniversary logo on it, and they should be here soon.
That is awesome. Yeah. You got to let me know when they come.
Yeah, I will.
Wait, now you got to get the character on the hood of the Lincoln.
Yeah, right?
Oh, no, that wasn't his Lincoln. That was your uncle's Lincoln.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now you can't do that. But you can do it on the van.
Yeah, right.
On the side of the van.
Yeah.
Man, that would be, okay, that'd be pretty interesting. So, Larry, thank you so
much.
Thank
you very much. And appreciate it.
Anytime you want to come back on, and if you want, I can let you know when I have musicians coming on and everything.
That's great.
You know, the door's open. And God, I wish you the best. I know you're going to learn how to play guitar. As a matter of fact,
this will be my first. If I learn, and I'll debut my first song here on the podcast.
Tell Brad to teach you.
Yes,
there you go.
Say, yes,
all right, Brad. Yeah,
then I can get on his podcast.
Yeah, Mouthful of Graffiti?
Yeah.
Mouthful of Graffiti. That which is he gets some great people on there.
No, he definitely does.
But, yeah, he hasn't asked me to come on yet.
I know. We're both getting
started. I used to play, Brad. Come on. Don't DJs count? I guess not. So if you have an idea or someone you would like to hear on the podcast, or if you would like to come on, let me know. Send an email to podcast@harfordcountyliving.com, and I will do my best to either get that person on, get you on, or talk about the idea that you wanted me to talk about. And also, if you can, please, please, please leave a full review at lovethepodcast.com/HarcoLiving. Again, that's lovethepodcast.com/HarcoLiving. And also, please follow the Facebook page, facebook.com/HCL Show. Very simple to get to. Again, it's facebook.com/HCL Show. What I tend to do is when you leave a full review and you follow the Facebook page, either or both, hopefully both, because it's a better chance for you, I do contests. Or not contests. I give away things every once in a while, whether it be gift cards or something else. This is your chance to win. And you can enter, well, of course, you can only like the page once, but they're full reviews as many times as you want, because you can leave a full review for certain episodes or for the podcast as a whole. And even if you liked it 5 years ago or left a review 5 years ago, you're in the drawing each time I do it. So again, you know, for the reviews, go to lovethepodcast.com/HarcoLiving, and please follow and like our page at facebook.com/HCL Show. And I want to leave you with these words that a very wise man taught me at broadcasting school. If it is to be, it is up to me.